I got a piece of junk mail today. And on a postmark, you know how they put these little ads in the postmarks there, you know? Little ribbon there. It says, you know, there's all kinds of little messages now they're putting on the postal ribbon type things. And this one says, when you receive mail, somebody loves you. They ain't seen some of the mail I get, friend. I'll tell you, bring it up there, George. Somebody loves you when you receive mail. Yeah. I don't know whether I should approach this head on or not. Excuse me one minute here. I have a little business here. Just a minute. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you mind if I indulge here right on the air, George? Do you mind? Huh? You don't mind? Do you have a high fidelity out there? Any of you listening to us on hi-fi? I know a guy who, every time he sees the phrase high fidelity, gets nervous. There's one thing he ain't ever been, and that's faithful. So, the only fidelity around his house are those two Wharfdale speakers. But just not. Would you please pick it up, George, man, and give me a little echo chamber. No. Turn up the gain very big when I give you the cue. Give me a little echo chamber and we'll have tonight's mystery sound, okay? Tonight's mystery sound. It's worth $50,000 for the first person who identifies that sound will receive a chance to be available, to be eligible for the $50,000 mystery award. George, if you will, 1, 2, 3, 4, please. Thank you. Very nice. That's good enough for them. Tonight, as part of our vast public service programming, we take special pride in tonight's salute to a fast-growing and very intriguing minority, which is growing by leaps and bounds. In fact, it is a fast-growing hobby. Please bring it up there. Tonight's fastest growing hobby, it's hobby time on our time. What is your hobby? Let us know what your hobby is, friends. We may select your hobby for a special musical salute. Do you collect old bed springs? Do you collect used water faucets? What is your hobby? Let us know. Tonight we would like to salute a fast-growing hobby which many people are taking up for fun and profit. Shoplifting. The fun of the chase, the excitement of the illicit. The world's goodies are at your command. So tonight, we would like to salute all those people who are taking it up for the first time. Shoplifting. Yes, it's hobby time. Thank you, George. Thank you. We would like to salute tonight's outstanding hobbyist. Unfortunately, many hobbies entail a certain amount of danger. In fact, the most exciting hobbies of all are hobbies which do have a certain element of danger. Very few people can get excited today over crocheting. Not many people find tatting this day and age the creation of a new doily, one of the new dynamic in this age of action hobbies. For example, scuba diving has a certain amount of danger involved in it. And without the danger, I doubt whether many people would be as interested in scuba diving as they are today. This is also true of free-fall parachuting, which can have a lot of excitement at certain times. We must admit that skiers, I doubt very much whether skiers would be interested if they were sent down the hills, down the slopes, on little rails, wearing safety belts, and they're completely insured against any form of physical danger. Do you agree, George? I would say this. Adultery is a hobby. Also has its elements of danger. Like, I know one guy that ran so fast one night when he was discovered that he outran a charge of 20-gauge shotgun shells. That, of course, was the full choke shell. And, man, he moved. He did not realize he was in the condition that he was in. But he actually outran the charge and was able to escape safely. He never tires of telling the story. And so that's part of the exciting new world of action hobbies. And so tonight we would like to salute an outstanding hobbyist who really pulled it off, if I might say. In Kuala Lumpur, in Malaysia, shopkeepers in Brunei went on the alert for women shoplifters today after one young girl shoplifter was caught when a squeal came from her bosom. She had stolen a weeping doll and stuffed it in her oversized brassiere, and at the worst possible moment, it let out a mama, and she was in the pokey. So tonight, we do not know whether we should salute shoplifting or oversized brassieres or talking bosoms. All three can be fascinating at a certain time. Thank you, George. Thank you. That was very good. Very, very good. And I suppose the reason I'm fascinated by this, I don't think there's hardly a person alive in 20th century America, and probably all over the world, let's face it, all over the world, that has not at one time or another been involved in either deliberate shoplifting or inadvertently something fell in their shopping bag when they were leaving. This is a curse. And most of us have done it when we were, we were in the formative stage. Do you agree with that, George? Or don't you want to admit to anything yet? The 7-year limitation clause has not yet applied to you, eh? Well, I'll tell you, I guess it might as well make a confession time here tonight, eh? The times when you just got to unload, your sins. A man has an insensate desire to expiate his sins. This is a fact. They claim that this is why the great pharaohs of Egypt built the pyramids, to somehow convince God that their heart was in the right place in spite of all the bad stuff they did during their day and age. It's a well-known fact that Nero, when Rome was burning, attempted to expiate his sin by playing a few sonatas on his Amati. For those of you who are curious about the type of violin that Nero played, it was an Amati, in case you're curious. It's A-M-A-T-I, an Amati. And he played it damn well, I say. He just played like mad, and he was attempting, of course, to lay a little beauty on the world for the bad stuff he had done. And one of his predecessors, as a matter of fact, caused this fit to see that a horse was made a senator in his time. Did you know that story? Oh, yes, Caligula made a horse a senator. He just declared him a senator, and he was. He gave him a full vote. Well, in our time, of course, we don't use the whole horse, but that's because we never do anything fully the way they did it in those days. I'm sorry if that was an elusive literary allusion. However, those things one must take in one stride. One cannot speak down to the audience, right? Right. So I suspect that we better not. However, I will say this, though, that my career as a shoplifter was short, meteoric, and altogether successful. I did not stuff any talking dolls down my bosom. I will concede that. Not having a bosom and not having much interest in talking dolls, at least the kind you could stuff down your bosom. I will concede that I have had an interest in various dolls of my acquaintance, but I use the word in its small letter sense. Just a bit of slang, persiflage. Is what we say, persiflage. That's a good word. I would like to suggest that you add this to your vastly growing vocabulary. Persiflage. It's spelled P-U-R-S-I-L-A-G-E-F. Persiflage. Persiflage. Persiflage is taken from the ancient Latin persona, persini, persa, persuus, which is the origin of our word purse. today. Purse, like he grabbed her purse and ran like hell. This is the origin of that word. You've heard the word purse, right? So since you have tuned into this intellectual program tonight, we'd like to welcome you to the forum. We'd like to welcome you to this hobby. This is Hobby Night. And I would like to describe one, I suppose, as a form of expiating my sin, the time that I really... I suspect that that when a successful job or caper, as we often refer to it here around the mob, a successful job or caper is often pulled off only when the motivation is extremely strong. Like when you really want some scratch, you're able to pull it off good. When you're just going after the scratch because you think it would be kind of nice to keep it around the house, you're liable to find yourself in trouble, because motivation plays a great role in human existence. Do you agree with that, George? Correctement. Motivation, it plays a role in almost every phase of human activity. Like, for example, I mean, if you're motivated enough to learn algebra, you will learn algebra. I mean, there's no question about it. If you're out with a chick, you know, and you're motivated enough, you may be successful. Not always. Don't mistake Shepherd's words. He did not say motivation is a substitute for talent. Oh, no. You could be motivated out of your skull, but if you ain't got no talent, she's just level a hand. He ain't just belt you one under the eye and walk away. Talent is necessary. Agree with that. Now, a lot of people find themselves with a dearth of talent. Well, that's been an old human problem. And so these are the people who buy textbooks, handbooks, you know, on sex, anything from sex on how to make money. I can tell you this, Aristotle Onassis never bought a book on how to get rich. No. He just got rich. How? Talent. Talent. I want you to look right deep down into your gut tonight, friends. And incidentally, maybe you do not know the origin of that very interesting word, talent. The word talent, it comes from talentus, talentai, talanus, talanuntus, which is from the Latin meaning dinero, mucho dinero, or money. In the early days, money was even called talent. Did you know that? 7 talents of gold. Didn't you know this? Well, you're learning a lot tonight, aren't you? Yes. Talent. I would suggest if you have a big, thick dictionary, you know, with a lot of words, and a lot of various meanings to each word, look up talent, T-A-L-E-N-T. You will see that it refers also to money. And so a man who had talent in the old days, in the Latin, amatus, hic, haec, hocus, in huius, in vici, agricola talentus, that says the farmer is making a lot of money by spitting into the curb. Well, I'm using this as an example of my fluency in Latin. Speaking of talentus, talentai, dull bucks, this is WOR New York, right here at a big town. Yes, sir. Right here where it all begins, where it all ends. Who was it who once said, when you go over the bridge, when you go over to George Washington Bridge, you're out of town? Correct them all. Yeah, pump, pump, pump. It's money time here. And if you're wondering about the whole problem of ecology and environment and so forth, we'd like to suggest a great article in the January Harper's by Peter Drucker, who makes some really fantastic points. And by the way, Harper's is one of my old favorite magazines. It's one of the first magazines, as a matter of fact, that I remember my mother getting as a subscription, you know, and had a lot of big words in it. Anyway, the January Harper's is a real gas. They've got an article by Simone de Beauvoir called Sensuality and Sexuality in Old Age. So if you'd like to try Harper's, it's just $1 for a regular issue. But if you'd like to get it at your home, 12 issues for $4.25. That's less than 36 cents a copy. Don't send money. Phone LT1-4747 in New York. If you're out of town, call Collect. That's LT1-4747. Or write Harper's, WOR, 1440 Broadway, New York. And so since a lot of you people do not understand about money because, you know, it was invented here in this city. Do you agree with that, George? It's just, oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't mean everybody gets onto it. It was invented here. Now, hey, are you aware that the word sex is a word that was really not used prior to 1867? You aware of that? 1867. The word sex was invented in 1867 because sex, as we know it, was invented in that year. Now, very few of you know this, I'm sure, although certain scholars in the field have noted this quite often. I would like to point out to those of you who are not scholars in the field and who would like to impress that chick of yours tomorrow night when you're sitting in the GTO and you're looking for something to talk about, you want to get around to the big topic, just look her right in the eye and say, honey, would you be interested in knowing who invented sex? And she's liable to, you know, look at you long, hard look and say, don't give me that now. Don't tell me. It's no, I'm not referring to me, although there are certain people who probably feel that's true due to my talent. However, the actual invention of sex as we know it in the 20th century. Now listen to me for a minute. Now, be honest. Listen, I'm not being funny. Do you know that sex prior to 1867 was not considered fun and games? It was like, shaving. It was like a thing a person had to do. In fact, prior to that time, they always referred to having a child, a big gap and all that stuff, you know. They did not refer to sex the way we do today. As we know today, sex has a certain connotation, you know, fun and games and people hollering whoopee and guys swinging from chandeliers, wearing paper hats, gunfire, and all the rest of it that goes around sex, you know. Well, that was invented in 1867 by, of all people, a Belgian, Adolphus Sextus, who is a Belgian who lived in a small city outside of Brussels. And the word, of course, is taken from his name, which goes back to the Latin six. You know of this, of course. Sextunus, sextus, sexti, sextinus, meaning six, 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 six. I don't know why they put them all on a row like that, but that's the way the Latins were. However, nevertheless, Adolphus Sextus, Dr. Adolphus Sextus, invented sex that we know today. And he's given us a great boon. Where would playwriting be without it? The whole publishing industry would collapse today if the great pioneer work of Mr. Sextus was not as well received as it was. Now, that's a later semester. That's not covered in this course. However, just suffice it to say that if you visit a small town just outside of Brussels, that's 20 miles southeast of Brussels, and the town is a town called Compiègne-aux-Bains, which means I have a pain in my ankle. Why they named it that, we do not know. That's lost in history. The town is over 3,000 years old. However, in Compiègne-aux-Bains, there is a statue in the town square to Adolphus Sextus that is a statue to the great creator of sex. And I went and visited this. It was a very humble pilgrimage because a lot of people go and visit this statue, and it's a great bronze bust, tremendous statue, fantastic. And he doesn't look like the kind of guy that would do it. He has these giant mutton chop, enormous mutton chop sideburns, great big, the biggies, you know, that hang down, you know, like guys like Ebenezer Stooge wore, the tremendous ones. He has a great big handlebar mustache, and he looks pretty mad in the, like so many of those early busts look, you know, the guy looks really bugged. Mad, not bugged, really. He just looks like he's been rebuffed. And that, perhaps, is the clue to his invention of sex as we know it. He was the first guy that probably got told off very loud and clear by a lady of his acquaintanceship. And from that minute on, sex had taken a whole new turn. It did not have anything to do with the process of progenitation or growing radishes. It not, did not have anything to do with all the earlier stuff like settling the West. That would have been a good thing to have been called upon to settle the state of Idaho. I think you would have enjoyed that, George. When men were called upon, a patriotism demanded to indulge. And one did not go into this thing the way one does today. In fact, in the earlier days prior to the Civil War, when a man or a woman, as the case might be, was about to indulge in what we refer to as, as a little action, let's put it that way. It was done with the highest of patriotic motives, either to settle the West, to provide new citizens for a growing nation, or to provide another member for the church, who would again, of course, sustain the pillars of society. And so it was a very common sight for a person as he leaped into the feather bed to do so, humming the Stars and Stripes Forever, possibly the Washington Post March, all patriotic ditties that refer to the great and growing nationalism of this burgeoning young country. There was very little of the action that we know today, like coy bitings of the earlobe, things like whispering sweet nothings, center foldouts were totally unknown in the publications of the day. Sex, in short, was a function of patriotism. It was a function of religion, which is a far cry. You see, sex at that time, as a matter of fact, it was quite often, very, very common, for sex to be indulged in by both parties, carrying small American flags and often waving them at crucial moments. And to admit that one had fun while one had sex was to not only totally miss the point of sex, but it sounded somewhat, not only unpatriotic, it sounded somewhat subversive. One does not have fun going to church. One does not have fun going to a patriotic celebration at the foot of the Washington Monument, does one, George? And so it was with sex. Well, excuse me, ma'am. We owe a lot to Adolphus Sextus, but you want to hear about my experiment in that other great hobby, the rip-off, as we call it today? You want to hear about it? Well, it came about through motivation. Now, motivation rarely has anything to do with your job. This is a sad fact of life. That you probably notice that yourself as you sit dozing off at the office. That's right, to become fully motivated. I've gone to so many business luncheons today in this, this veil of tears in my time, that they have all sort of melded into one great luncheon where I'm always sitting with somebody named Marty or Bob or Fred or Al. He comes from some great amorphous agency and never even... It's just one giant thing. No longer does it have a specific quality. In other words, J. Walter Thompson. I'm not having lunch with Bob Gutstop from J. Walter Thompson, the big man on the paper towel field. It's not that specific any longer. I'm having a big luncheon. It's like all wars have become war. So when we fight war, we're not fighting the Punic War. We're not fighting the War of the Roses. We're fighting war itself. War. Sex does not have anything to do with Esther Jane, Myrtle, or Alice Longnecker. No, no. It has to do with itself, sex. How not to. And guys write books on it. Well, so it is with our jobs. Most of us, the job has ceased to have a specific quality. I suspect this is due to the fact that many of us are living in what is generally called a computerized world. So it doesn't do you any good if you get, say, for example, a check here at this vast organization that I'm part of. Check comes down, and it's all stamped out. There's numbers on the bottom. And you call up because it is $422 short, which means you've got a check for $12 for the past 2.5 years of work. Well, at that point, you call up a department, which then refers you to a taped, kind of a computerized answering thing. And ultimately, if you finally get slowly sucked into this, you realize that you are not an employee at all. You are a unit. You are a unit which is every bit as replaceable as a transistor. Now, how many of you see, speaking of replaceable transistors, have you seen that commercial where the TV set, it's a TV set commercial? And by the way, I've always wondered about the, I've always wondered about the silly, self-contradictory side of many of the TV commercials. There's one, for example, that comes on, it's for a color set. And it says, yes, the new, Dynatron XDL17/4 magic color set has this fantastic new color clarifier, which filters the color through endless yards of Sienna Earth and gives you real true to life, rich with the tones of true nature, like this. Boom, on they come with a color shot. Well, now you're watching it on your old set. You know? And you see this great color picture comes out, see? Like I imagine a lot of dildocs never think that out, see? They see this great color picture. It's fantastic, comes on his set, and he turns to his wife and says, Mo, why don't we get a set that's got good pictures like that? She says, we never get no pictures like that. That's right, Clarence, and you insisted on buying that set. You remember? Don't give me that now. You were just as bad as I was. Why don't we get a set that's got good pictures like that? Of course, they're looking at the same, you know, they said it's beautiful color. And they never seem to relate the fact that this, and I wonder if in the agencies they do. There's another one, too, that you hear about sound. There's one that has about high five. You seen the high five one? Oh, yes. The guy says, are you living, this is one that's on radio. It's a radio spot. See, they figure, you know, sound, you're going to be listening to radio. So they come on and they say, are you listening to a set, an old-fashioned set, that cuts off the highs and cuts off the lows and produces a sound like this. And says, the new wide expanded sound Dyna Magic Note Hi-Fi set produces music like this. Pum, 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 pum. And of course, you're listening to it on your $6 transistor that you won in the Cracker Jack. And and I don't know, you know, that's all part of the scene. But there is a commercial, really interesting commercial, and it's about a television set. And it shows a shot, a black shot, just total black, and it's got all these tubes, regular tubes. And it says, we've removed, bap, 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 and you see the tubes disappearing. You've seen that one? Until finally there's nothing but this blackness, and replace it with long-lived, easily replaceable, solid-state devices. They don't call it transistors anymore. Solid-state devices. And you see the hand coming in. Well, every time I see that scene, the inner me salivates. They can have the solid-state devices. I would love to grab a hold of some of them tubes. You see, because if anybody, of course, I'm using the nomenclature here, tubes, and I'm using, naturally, the voice of the people, Vox Populi. When I say them tubes, we understand it is those tubes for you proper and correct people. But to us, who one time spent a great deal of time trying to steal tubes, it's them tubes. Well, it's one word. It's nothing to do with right or wrong. That's the way it is, right, George? Well, it's like ball players. You get a really good ball player. Hey, by the way, speaking of ball players, did you hear who won the Golden Glove Award? The Golden Glove Award. That's the best fielding in the National League last year. You see how sad it is? A guy wins an award that is one of the most sought-after awards in baseball, and nobody mentions it. All they're interested is, you know, the best pitcher. Nobody knows. The Golden Glove, the best fielding average, and his fielding average was .998. That meant he made damn few errors all year, and he was a regular. I'll give you a further clue. He was a New York regular. He's from New York. Now, remember, it's a National League award. Who won the Golden Glove this year? Now, you're thinking, aren't you? We'll let you marinate a little bit out there. Well, that's a fantastic award, you know. As an old ball player, I played ball. And at one time I was involved in minor league ball. The fielding is rarely observed by the fans. You know, they don't. Let's put it this way: the unsophisticated fan. You know, for a long time, football fans never hardly ever noticed defense. And now they're beginning to recognize defense. See, defense has become a real big thing. Well, it'll take a while for the fans that go out to Shea, you know, with their banners, to realize the guy that's making that fantastic stop at shortstop, or the guy that's making that long, loping, leaping catch out by the scoreboard is doing something that's helping old Tom Seaver pretty good, you know. But who was it? Come on. Yeah, it's a New York player, won the Golden Glove Award this year. Best fielder, he had the best fielding average of the year. 998. That's a fantastic fielding average. And I'll give you a further clue. The guy who was second was a third baseman for the Cubs, Ron Santo. So you can see this guy had a better fielding average than Santo. Pretty good. Well, that's we'll let you marinate a bit on that one there, you know. But the reason I looked at this tube commercial, I thought to myself, oh man, you know, and I heard about that chick with the doll in her thing there, and she's leaving and it starts squeaking. Well, when I was a kid, see, I was a teenager. I was not well, everybody. You don't assume that I was always a little kid, you know, not at all. And I at no point do I look back and wish I was a kid again. Never. I'm just warning you this. So for those of you idiots out there who think that that's true, you are misinterpreting what I'm saying. Variably. However, I was about 14, see, and I had just gotten my amateur radio license, a ham. And I'll tell you, I was scratching. By scratching, it was Tap City. I had this paper out, and you don't do much more than break even. You know, after you spend a lot of time buying Milky Way bars and that stuff. Yeah, that's the worst part. But I discovered as a paper boy that I used to spend more money because I was always around where the papers were handed out. See, and the place where they used to give us all the papers, the guy that was the head paper man, and yeah, you know, he was the big mother of the paper world. See, and you'd come there and he'd give you all the papers. You get all the papers and you had your regular route. And I had this bag and I used to ride around on my bike delivering the papers. Well, he also, the place where we'd get the papers was a candy store. Though I have to tell you what would happen. Yeah, you come in there, and you're putting your papers together. So the next thing you know, you got a couple of Milky Way bars, which you put on a tick. You know, he'd say, hey, George, how about a Coke? He'd say, okay, fine. He opens the Coke, hands it out to you, and he writes it down, a little thing there. Well, by the end of the week, your 87 cents, which you were, you know, your full salary for the week at a paper boy, you say, well, time to get paid. You go in there on a Saturday afternoon, you'd give them your book and all that stuff, and he'd say, well, let's see, this week you owe me 46 cents. Well, that meant you were going backwards. See, very early in life, I realized some of the basic rules of economy, that, there's nothing worse than credit buying. More than one guy has thought seriously late at night of suicide and worse as a result of those credit cards. I mean it. I'm serious. I just wonder how many guys have gone, you know, total bananas because of credit. It can really flip guys. And so I used to have that problem. I'm working as a like, you know, it's raining, snowing, and I'm struggling out to deliver. And every week I would go behind. And so finally one week I said to George, I says, George, don't sell me nothing this week. Don't sell me nothing. It's okay. It's up to you, kid. Now, nothing. If I come up and say, I want a Milky Way bar, say no. He said, okay, it's up to you, kid. Well, that lasted till roughly late Wednesday. I said it on Monday, see. By Wednesday, I'm down on my knees because, I was there. There was, every time I'm folding up the papers, this big counter was next to me with all the Milky Way bars and the Butterfingers. I went through a Butterfinger stage. You know the Butterfinger bars? Yeah, I got a terrible thing on Butterfingers for a while, you know. And I'd see those Butterfingers, and then what was worse is that I was having bad influences, bad vibes, all the time. Because Schwartz, he didn't give a damn. You know, he kept sinking lower and lower. Oh, yeah, some weeks he'd be like $12 in debt, which is fantastic, when the most you can make on a paper route is about 85 cents a week.
So, you know, Schwartz was really working on a margin, man, so he didn't care. So now I'm putting my papers together. It's late Wednesday, and Schwartz has got this big, fat Butterfinger bar in his hands, and he's going, you know, he's crunching away, and I could smell that peanut. You know, it's like there's nothing worse than smelling chunky style peanut butter when you don't want any. See? Believe me, man is a creature of temptation. The devil speaks in many voices. Many voices. Not only does the devil come there with a big forked tail, you know, with a big pitchfork, he comes cleverly dressed as Schwartz, eating a Milky Way bar, or, you know, downing a Butterfinger. And so he's eating the Butterfinger, lying up, putting the papers away. And Schwartz says, oh, boy, wow. He says, hey, do you want a bite of my Butterfinger? So that's the worst thing. That's like an alcoholic. It's saying, hey, you just like a little sip of my wild turkey. Shee. You know, that's bad news, see? So, sure enough, by the end of the week, well, what happens? It's like the problem with any time you make a resolution. I wonder how many guys have made resolutions, you know, for the whole big new year, and they find by the end of the month they're doing what they had a resolution against twice as much as they were doing before the resolution. Yes, that's a fact of human nature. Do you agree, George? And one of the worst facts. And so that week, the week that I told George never to sell me anything, that week, I wound up $4.12 in the hole. The worst I ever did. Because the minute I went off, I went, you know, hey, George, give me back. And I'm buying six packs full of Coke and a whole bit, and I'm buying it for the gang. And, you know, what the hell? You can't take it with you. You only live once. And by Saturday afternoon, you know, George, he's got my book, and it's thick, you know. And he says, you better leave your bike here over the weekend. You may not come back. You know, that kind of stuff. So I was Tap City, you know, Tap City. I'm also a ham. And I want to, you know, I'm going to go on the air. See, now, I'm on the air. I've got about 2 watts. Now, this transmitter I built, and I got a magazine. You know, there's every hobby has a magazine. Oh, yes, the specialty magazine, many of you don't know about it. Almost any hobby that you name, there is a magazine, like the hobby of bone-handled knives. There is a magazine, a monthly newsletter. They're famous. Oh, yeah, sure. There's an international club. You can join an international club of bottle cap collectors. And they have an illustrated magazine, which is in scope. Well, in the amateur radio world, there's this ham magazine, QST, see? So here I am. I've got QST. And they had, in QST, they had an article on a, what they called it a junk box special, which means, you know, you can make this thing for practically no bread. Well, of course, that's always ridiculous. Junk box means you got a junk box full of stuff that most guys can't even afford to buy anyway. You know? So anyway, junk box was it. And it was built around a tube, a specific tube. I actually did have all the other stuff that was required to build this transmitter. Now, here we're getting into motivation. And I took the diagram out. I'm reading this thing. Gee, man, what fantastic. You know, you can run, you know, 70 watts of power. That's an immense amount. That's like if you got an Elgin bicycle and you're thinking seriously, you can convert it to become a Ferrari. Big difference. And so it said that all of this stuff obviously can be found in even the poorest, most scrabbling ham's junk box, with the exception of the tube. Well, I run down to my junk box. I had a whole pile of junk. You know, I had collected a great big box of stuff. My mother was always threatening to throw it out, but, you know, this stuff was like pure gold to me. All kinds of condensers and the resistors and various types of filters and stuff. I had every part, except the tube. Well, not a tube, in case you're curious, if you're a ham out there, was a 6L6G. This is a beam power pentode, glass beam pentode. Well, now,
That tube, if I were to go out and buy that tube would mean at least 7 weeks of delivering the Chicago Tribune free, not buying one single Milky Way bar, cutting myself off from Butterfingers, and in fact becoming a monk, which was impossible for me. You can tell. No way. I'm a weak person. Lord, I am weak. No question. So I wanted that 6L, 6G. I could taste it. Yeah. 70 watts. I've got all the parts. Well, in our town, there was a big department store that had a huge appliance department. You know, they had stuff like record players. They had stuff like irons, hair dryers, mixers. And they had a whole big, big collection of stuff like record players, high fidelity, radios and stuff. Well, that afternoon, I mosey into the appliance department, and it was a big, like a Saturday afternoon, there's a lot of people, I see. That's the only time you can really pull the rip-off. Don't go solitary, friend. Man, you'll stick out like a sore thumb. So I'm walking around in this appliance department, and I'm looking at all this these record players, that big one, you think, Magnavox record players and all that. And I walked up to the salesman, saying, excuse me, I'm just curious, what kind of power output tubes do you have in some of these? What do you use, you know, for audio? Yeah, I don't know. You know, they never know any of that stuff. Yeah, I don't know. All I know is they got 20 watts. I said, yeah, but what kind of tubes are you going to find, you know? Just curious. He said, well, I'll have to call Eddie. Hey, Eddie! Eddie! Eddie comes out from back in the service department. You know, he's got an apron. He said, Eddie, what the kid wants to know what kind of tubes you got in the final of somebody's. So, of course, Eddie never gets groovy questions like that. So Eddie says, oh, well, he says, let's see. He says, Magnavox, over that uses a 6L6Gs, push-pull. We got one that uses 6L6s, push-pull parallel down there. We got a couple of ones that use 6SJ5s and so on. And so I'm thinking, gee, you know. No, I say, thanks, Eddie. Write the paper on it. So I joined the crowd. Well, 5 minutes later, I'm edging my way around the back of one of these big Magnavox fantastic radio phonograph combinations with a changer and a whole bit, you know, 8 speakers and all. 30 seconds later, Shep is on the elevator. He's got his coat collar pulled up, and I'm out on the street running like Billy be damned. In the pocket of my sheepskin coat, there nestled a Raytheon 6L6G. Brand spanking new. Well, then began a frantic period of building. I am building my transmitter, and I had this beautiful 6L6G. And I got it on the air. And it worked. I ran 70 watts. But there's a funny thing about it. I mean, I just don't know how to tell you, you know? They always say that ill-gotten gains are the sweetest. Right? That's true. I have never enjoyed a transmitter more than I enjoyed that transmitter. I mean, it just sit there and say, hey, that's a groovy looking 6L6G here. I'd say, yes, of course. Got it at Allied, you know. I have a spare here. See, I went back the following Saturday. I figured, what's the point, you know, of just leaving one in that set there? After all, he had a pair of 6L6Gs in push-pull. So I had a spare. But now, don't think for a minute, friends, that I'm advocating a rip-off. Not at all. Not at all. That very same transmitter pulled some dirty tricks on me. Like, for example, it was the first transmitter I ever had that was so full of parasitics that I had a bigger signal on 75 meters than I had on 40. And in fact, I got cards from all over the world on my 10-meter signal. And I was still on 40 meters. And so, you see, you know, six of one, half dozen the other, you never really truly win. yeah.
WOR New York, next. Lester Smith and the News.